Blog Talk Radio.
The following program contains material which may be considered offensive to some listeners and outright disturbing to others. The views, opinions, positions, or strategies expressed in this program are solely the thought property of Art Underground, who accepts no liability for the content of this program or for the consequences of any actions taken on the basis of the information provided. This program will contain strong language, pervasive writing, thematic elements, mild pervitude, and general insanity. Listening to the program may or may not induce and or cause headaches, migraines, difficulty breathing, bleeding of the nose, mild antisocial personality disorder, failing faith in humanity syndrome, temporary blindness, sudden panic attacks, confusion, rapid pulse, dizziness, hissy fits, loss of appetite, and may even induce fits of rage. And while listener discretion is advised, the host is apathetic, unconcerned, and uninterested with any of the above problems that you may experience. We simply could not give less of a shit if we tried to. Enjoy!
There's a storm coming. Are you ready? Are you prepared? You damn well better be. This storm here, she ain't nothing like you've ever seen before. So grab hold of your bootstraps and hold on tight. This is gonna be one bumpy damn ride.
Good evening and welcome, everybody. This is American Renegade. I'm your host, Art Underground, and it is... Damn, there's a sound check for you. It is... Damn, it's May already. Hell, I'm having a hard time keeping up with what month it is. May 4th, 2020. Man, this... You know, I would think by, you know, with all these stay-home orders and well, it doesn't faze me any, so of course I guess it doesn't surprise me much that it seems like the days are going by fast. But for those of you who are actually having to stay home, if you're abiding by your local stay-home orders, I bet time just drags and drags and drags. Fortunately, this whole, you know, stay-at-home, lockdown, whatever, has not affected my lifestyle at all, not one bit. Because the places I need to go and things that I need to do are, well, they're considered essential. Of course, my refusal to wear a mask has a few people upset. I'm like, hey, if you have so much faith that masks are going to protect you and everybody around you, well, goody for you. You wear one. I look at it like vaccines. If you believe that the vaccines work so damn well and you get them every year, well, it doesn't matter if I get them or not, because even if I get sick, I can't make you sick, right? You got the vaccine. Yeah. Anyway, welcome, everybody. Hope you've had a good day. Monday, first day of the week. I was kind of glad to see today come because I had gone all the way into town yesterday to pick up some supplies. I'm trying to get I got a project out here. I'm running some plumbing around the property so I can have the ability to water my garden beds. I'm doing like this Hugel culture kind of thing where you just kind of pile up debris and you make these crazy little piles that like they're like 3 foot wide and like 3 foot tall, and they might be like 9 foot long, you know, and you just piling up organic material, sticks, leaves, whatever, you know, grass trimmings, and you just pile it up and you let it sit for a couple of years and let it kind of decay and all, and it creates this really beautiful raised bed without having to use border material like logs or bricks or anything like that. No need for any of that because it creates its own, I guess, call it a habitat, if you will. And what's really cool is I see Bringing It Boy popped in the chat room as well. So we got Bringing It Boy and Hank Jones. So thanks for joining us, guys. So anyway, what happens is, what's really cool about the Hugo culture thing is all it has to do. Yeah, Hank's asking, is it like natural composting? Yeah, that's basically what it is. You start with like say 2-inch logs, 2-inch thick logs, and you lay them on the ground, the width that you want and the length that you want. And then on top of that, you start piling, like, if you got 2-inch logs on the ground, then you basically, you'll lay like 1-inch sticks across the top of that, and maybe do like, you know, until you get like about 8 inches deep. And then you'll start piling on little bitty twigs, like what you would use for kindling. You just pile that up until you got about, maybe a total of about 13 inches deep. And then on top of that, you'll dump a bunch. What I did is I dumped a bunch of wood chips. When they go along the road lines and they're clearing the power lines, and what they have is the big industrial chippers, so they chip everything down into nice, you know, nice wood chips, like what you would use natural wood chips in your garden areas. You know what I'm talking about? And then I cover all of that with these wood chips until I've got now about 2 foot deep. And then as I cut grass, I'll collect all the trimmings, and then I'll pile that on top until I'm like, you know, almost 3 foot deep. But what happens is, over time, as it composts, it'll collapse in on itself. But I've done some areas where basically I just took old lumber and laid it on, you know, I killed off all the grass and weeds on that area and then laid some old lumber down, and then did about 8 inches deep of 6 to 8 inches deep of another way you can do this, lay some old rotten lumber down and then do like 6 to 8 inches deep of wood chips. And then on top of that, regardless of whatever way you do it, once your wood chips are down, you'll do about 2 or 3 inches of like straw. And then on top of that, you'll just rake up, like, if you have like oak trees and stuff like I have out here, I've got oak and maple and all. Well, they drop their leaves real heavy every fall. So what I'll do is I'll rake all that up now, after I get the grass trimmings up where it's, you know, probably maybe about a foot deep. And then I'll just cover it with, well, I'll put down a thin layer, like maybe about a half inch thick layer of a mix of compost, humus, and topsoil. And then I'll cover it. I'll put that on top of the straw, and then I'll cover it with like leaves and stuff that I rake up every fall. And then what I'll do before I put the leaves down, I'll take a whole bunch of just a handful of seeds and sprinkle them out on top of that. Then I'll put, you know, on top of the topsoil and all, and then I'll do like about 1 or 2 inches thick of the leaves that I rake up from under the oak trees and stuff, and then just saturate it real heavy with water. Just take a garden hose and just put your sprinkler or whatever, if you just have a spray nozzle, lock it on auto and just let it just saturate until this thing is just soaked. Regardless which way you do it, if you do the three foot deep pile or you do the 1.5 foot deep pile, either way you want to saturate it real good. And what's really cool is, because you're using wood chips and straw and all this natural organic material, and you've got your seeds in and amongst all of this under those leaves and everything, once you get everything saturated, you can get like 2-3 weeks of no rain. Doesn't matter, because it's still soaking wet in there, and this provides long-term watering for your crops. Hugel culture, look it up. Hugel culture. It is just an awesome way of gardening. Anyway, so I decided, since I was doing some repair work on plumbing, I wanted to go into town and pick up some plumbing so I could run these lines all out through the property, so I could do like some soaker hoses and stuff. It's all going to be gravity fed from rain catch and all of that. So it's going to be really cool, so, you know, self-sustaining. I know that's kind of a crazy word for me to use, right? I don't know how it's spelled. It's Hugel culture. Just try. Google has this really great, you know, autocorrect thing. So, you know, But anyway, so I went into town yesterday, not thinking about it was Sunday. I got all the way into town, and there at the hardware store, and I'm like, damn, it's Sunday. So I had to go back today and get it. I had to get all this stuff. But this is like, it's a really expensive project to do. It's a little over $100 to do this, about $150 to do what I'm doing for the material, the elbow, you know, the 90s and the couplers and all. Thank heaven I had all of the 3/4 inch piping. So all I had to do was get spigots and couplers and 90s and stuff like that. But I had to get some more primer and piping cement and thread tape and stuff like that. So about $150. But the cool thing is that might be it. Try that. HugelKultur. That sounds about right. Try it and see what it says. But the cool thing is it's a one-time investment. And after that, all you need is the soaker hose. And from then on, you have a permanent way. If you set up a gravity feed system that you run off a rainwater catch, you're good to go. And I have a well I can drop a bucket down. So even if I get like 2 months of no rain, I can draw water, fill my overhead water catch system, and again, gravity feed my garden areas. And it's all off the grid. It's awesome. It's going to be so cool. Anyway, up first, we've got Bill de Blasio. Now, we all know who Bill de Blasio, mayor of New York City, at a news conference just about a week or so ago, he called for more financial support from the United States government. Now, it's interesting that the U.S. government has already allocated $150 billion to reimburse the state and local governments of New York for virus-related expenses. But Mayor de Blasio says we need the federal government to make up for all lost revenue, period. Well, New York City's tax revenue, according to a report in Reuters, however you want to pronounce it, according to a April 16th report, tax revenue for New York City will drop by about $7.4 billion. And that's just in its current and next budget due to the coronavirus outbreak. Now, you compare with tax estimates released back in January, where revenue is now expected to fall by about $2.2 billion in the fiscal year of 2020 and by about $5.2 billion in 2021, which their fiscal year begins on July 1st. So, you know, here is old Bill de Blasio. It's a 3.5-minute clip. This is the only clip we have for tonight, unless we have more time and want to get into other things or I want to play something silly. Here is Bill de Blasio during that press conference a couple weeks ago.
New York City, the epicenter of the COVID-19 pandemic in the country. Now, as things are slowly beginning to look better there, how will the city handle the reopening? Joining me right now is the boss, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio. Mr. Mayor, it's great to have you this morning. Thanks very much for being here. I want to ask you that question right here. How will a reopening of New York look? What industries are poised to open first, and when do you see that happening?
Thank you, Maria. Well, first of all, Maria, you are a proud New Yorker, proud Brooklynite by background. You know how tough and resilient this city is. So the first thing I want to say is we will be back. We will be strong. In fact, we will be stronger. And we're going to create a city that builds on our previous success and comes back stronger and fairer. I believe we can do this. And I already see the naysayers out there saying, oh, New York City is not going to be able to come back. New York City fought back after the fiscal crisis, we fought back after 9/11, we fought back after Hurricane Sandy, we will fight back again.
How do you do it?
Yeah, what we need, there's no question in my mind, we must have the support of the federal government to do this, because right now, to be able to have a strong economy again and really restart, we have to be able to provide the basic services that have made this place work, police, fire, sanitation, healthcare, education, the things that have made New York City strong and allowed us to get through this crisis are now in the crosshairs because we've lost $7.4 billion. That's our projection from our budget. $7.4 billion in lost revenue $3.5 billion in new expenses to pay for the coronavirus and the fight to save lives, over $10 billion combined. The federal government must make us whole for us to be able to be in a position to restart. If we're not whole, if New York City is not whole, it will drag down the entire region, and it will hold up the entire national economic restart. If we are whole,
so how much money do you want,
Maria?
Mr. Mayor, how much money do you need from the federal government?
All the money that's been lost and will be lost, lost revenue, and this is true for New York and cities and states around the country. We need $7.4 billion. That's how much we've lost. That's how much we need to get back. Just like the federal government bailed out the airline industry, the tune of $58 billion, bail out the largest city in the country so we can restart and be able to be strong leaders in an economic revitalization in this country. We get that.
Let me ask you this. Are you using this crisis to take us into socialism? I just saw you on the press conference. You said this: the bigger picture of fair recovery for all, confront structural, economic, and racial inequalities. Are you looking to change things that have nothing to do with the coronavirus and were not impacted by that, Mr. Mayor?
Maria, I'm looking to go at the very things that the coronavirus crisis has dredged up, and we've seen it all over the country. There are vast health care disparities that have come up that must be addressed for the good of all of us. It's the right thing to do, but also to have a strong, healthy society. But Maria, what I'm talking about in the first instance, when we talk about just getting on our feet again, I think we all can count here. If we're missing $7.4 billion, and now we heard today there may be additional state budget cuts looming on top of that that will hit New York City and the whole rest of the state, we won't be able to provide the basic services and have the personnel we need who do that amazing work. You know, we're talking about the heroes, the first responders, the healthcare workers, the essential workers. These are the folks who need to keep their jobs going forward if we're going to have a healthy recovery. And if we are missing billions and billions of dollars, how on earth are we supposed to do that?
Okay. So here he's trying to talk about, you know, the money he wants, this hunt, you know, all of this money, you know, he wants more. You know, the U.S. government is already set to give him $150 million. All right. Or I'm sorry, $150 billion. That's with a B, $150 billion. All right. Already set to give him $150 billion, but that's not enough. He wants more. Well, I just ran the numbers, okay? If New York City's revenue, tax revenue, is going to drop by $7.4 billion, and they're expecting an additional $2.2 billion for the remainder of this year, and an additional $5.2 billion for 2021, well, if you add 7.4 plus 2.2 plus 5.2, you end up with $14.8 billion. Well, he says that he wants federal government to reimburse New York for all of its lost revenue. Okay, well, Governor de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio, here's one. Try this on for size. If all of your revenue for the remainder of this year and in the next year is only going to be $14.8 billion. Let's just round it off. Let's be conservative here and just say $50 billion. Now, that's being incredibly generous on my part. I'm playing the part of President Trump, okay? Here is what Trump ought to do. I'm going to be really, really generous here and just say, you know, we're going to ignore this $14.8 billion. We'll say $50 billion. Well, if we're already set to give you $150 billion and you're claiming you want all of the revenue that you're going to be lost, well, I'm generously rounding off that $14.8 billion and just calling it $50 billion. Well, that means the taxpayers get to save $100 billion. Instead of giving you $150 billion, we're going to give you the $50 billion that I was generous about, and you can go screw yourself on the remainder of it. That's what Trump ought to do. That's exactly what Trump ought to do. Or as Hank Jones in the chat room says, open the damn city back up. Holy hell, what a concept. Bringing it boy in the chat room says, give him some of that money with Obama's picture on it. Oh, that's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. Okay. So anyway, I don't know what old Billy Boy's problem is, but he needs to get a real grip on reality, because he's just seriously missing something. Okay. We've all seen the protests popping up around the country. Started with Michigan and Minnesota, and then Idaho, and then North Carolina, and then Texas and Oklahoma, and you know, it just keeps going. And now we've got California being hit with these and what's really crazy about California is the California protests have brought all of the activists, the anti-vaxxers, the Second Amendment supporters, you know, the build the wall supporters, they're bringing every single conservative right-wing activist group you can imagine out of the shadows. Be careful, though, because, you know, the Proud Boys may show up and, yeah, well, you know, I know a couple of them, and they are kind of racist a little bit. I actually know a couple Proud Boys, and they are, the ones that I know are racist. I don't know any of the 13%ers, so I can't say about them. I've met some of the 13%ers and some of the 1%ers. I've met some of them online, but I don't know any of them personally, and they all seem to be pretty cool characters. But I do know a couple of Proud Boys, and well, the ones that I know are racist, but that's beside the point. You're going to have bad apples in every group. And, you know, while Governor Whitmer might want to talk, there were Confederate flags and Nazi swastikas and when you actually go and you look at the videos and the pictures, I saw one swastika. That was it, one swastika. And as far as the Confederate flags go, folks, that's not the damn Confederate flag. It's the battle flag of West Virginia. I'm sorry, of Northern Virginia. The battle flag of Northern Virginia, also known as St. Andrew's Cross. It's not the Confederate flag. Stop the stupid. Anyway, now in the New York Times, just today, comes an article. The 13%ers are, these are guys that have done hard prison time. Actually, I do know some 13%ers. But they're not racist. The ones I know, they're not racist. And yeah, I met them in prison. And I actually had to get a tattoo cover-up because I actually had the 13% tattoo. But I had to get that covered up. Don't tell anybody. I'll have to deny it. But anyway, this article today comes out of New York Times that the coronavirus has now become the battle cry for U.S. extremists. And they're using this as an attempt to turn the pandemic into a potent recruiting tool, both in the deep corners of the internet and on the streets of state capitals, by twisting public health crisis to bolster their white supremacist anti-government agenda. You know, leave it to some left-wing liberal nut job to try to bring racism, radicals, and extremists into anything that they don't like. They don't like the fact Governor Whitmer, she's one of the biggest ones in all of this. She doesn't like the fact that the protesters are showing up with rifles, tactical gear, pro-American slogans. Shame on them. How dare they? Oh, boy. Next up. Remember, I've talked about this several times over the past few weeks. Originally, back around the middle of April there, I mentioned the guy in Florida, the gang member in Florida, Edward Williams, 26 years old, lived in Tampa, got busted, was sitting in jail for a couple weeks, I think it was. I don't remember exactly. I'm going off the top of my head here. But I think he was in, I think he sat in jail for like a week or week and a half or something like that. And then I guess because he was like in a high risk group, I don't know if it's because he had asthma or what the case may have been, but apparently he was in a high risk group and he was waiting a court, his day to go to court. So they let him out, no bond. And the very next day he got arrested for murder. Now this was in Tampa, Florida, Hillsborough County. And, you know, again, the very next day he gets arrested for murder. Well, I said then that, you know, this had been going on for a while. They'd been cutting inmates loose in New York and Florida, and California has this no bail thing. I'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, then on April 24th, this article came out in the New York Times. It's a slap in the face. Victims are endangered as jails free inmates. The debate over who should be let out has become fierce in some places. In Texas, Governor Greg Abbott issued an executive order barring the release of some inmates, arguing that it, quote, would not only gravely threaten public safety, but would also hinder efforts to cope with the COVID-19 disaster, end quote. And this order was fought in the Texas High Court, which ruled on procedural grounds in Abbott's favor. Now, law enforcement officials in Massachusetts expressed concern that the state's highest court had held a closed-door hearing on inmate releases. In Washington state, some law enforcement officials argued that a plan by the governor to grant nearly early release to nearly 1,000 inmates could include people who had committed assaults and sexual crimes, and Sheriff Robert Snaz of Lewis County said in a statement, quote, I feel the release of these additional offenders is of great risk to public safety. And these conversations have been taking place in courtrooms all across the country. Earlier in April, a prison in Marion, Ohio, became the largest known source of coronavirus cases in the country, with more than 1,800 inmates, which is about three-quarters of its population, testing positive. Two inmates and one staff member had died. St. Louis, they had a debate after the local prosecutor, known as the circuit attorney, and the public defender announced in late March that they'd agreed to seek release of dozens of defendants awaiting trial, including some accused of felonies like burglary and firearm possessions. And again, this has been going on all across the country. I see Green Beasley in the chat room. Welcome. So these conversations have been going on all across the country. Well, damn it, ABC News had an article came out yesterday. Man arrested three times in one day under California's corona-based zero bail policy. Officers in Los Angeles County arrested and released a suspect three times in one day after he was repeatedly let go based on the zero bail policy that California put in place, effective due to the coronavirus pandemic. On Wednesday, officers responded to a call of a man attempting to break into a vehicle in the city of Glendora in the San Gabriel Valley. According to police, Dijon Landrum, 24, was allegedly attempting to drive away in the stolen vehicle. He was arrested, issued a citation, and then let go. An hour later, they get a call about a man trying to take items from a resident's front yard. Respond, damn, same guy. Later that night, car reported stolen out of a parking lot. Damn it, wouldn't you know? Same guy. This is what we're up against, people. I used to always ask, what kind of stupid pill have you taken? I think the coronavirus has made all of these left-wing liberal loonies just rendered them completely clueless. Here's my attitude, and I'm speaking as a man who spent time in prison. All right? I was a very bad boy. I put a sheriff's deputy, a turnkey, a jailer in the hospital in a coma. Now, I went to prison. I did hard time for that. And I had it coming. I did the crime. I admitted to it. I accepted my responsibility. I did my time. I don't deny what I am. I don't do that kind of stuff now. But back then, I mean, we're talking 1981. Okay? That was a long time ago. I'm a different man now. My attitude is simple. Don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Zero bail, kiss my ass. I ain't playing this. Now, anybody who knows me knows I am not a great lover of the police. Especially when I read articles about police brutality. People being shot when there was no reason to shoot them. People being beaten when there's no reason to beat them. This is the kind of stuff that is not acceptable by, I don't care. And any police officer that engages in this kind of behavior should never be allowed to wear a badge or carry a gun ever again, because he's shown himself to be a danger to the population, to the people. He's a dangerous man, should not be allowed ever, ever to work in law enforcement. But I admit also that there are good police officers out there who do their job correctly, and these are the people that I respect. I know the sheriff's department here. I have personal relations with them. It's nothing for me to see him and walk up, hey, how's it going, guys? I know the sheriff over in the next county. When I see him, hey, sheriff, I'll stop and we'll chit-chat. But we're small towns. We're small country towns here. We're country folk here. And our police departments and our sheriff's departments, bad cops don't last around here. Ever. Because our sheriffs will not allow it. Our chiefs of police won't allow it. And I have a great deal of respect for our local law enforcement because they are good people and they do a good job. And you never hear about police brutality around here because it doesn't happen. Thank God for small towns. But this bullshit of being arrested and released three times in one day, bullshit. No excuse for that. And you wonder why, they wonder why people are pissed off. Are you kidding me? You can't understand why people are upset with you? I'm kind of curious what's going to happen when their local sheriffs come up for re-election, when their judges come up for re-election. I'm you know, the people, I hope and pray the people remember this. The people need to remember this and start holding these people accountable and start demanding action. Combine your open our state economy protests with get rid of bad cops and dirty cops. Combine the two of them together. Holy hell, I bet you get a movement going then. Okay, next up. Remember I talked, about a week and a half ago, I was talking about Harvard University with their $41 billion a year endowment, and they somehow managed to get $9 million from the $2.2 trillion stimulus package that was passed early in April. And I went down the list of all the different colleges and universities that had gotten money and how much they got. Remember that? Of course you do. I only did it. I only talked about it like three times over like a 2 week period. So of course, if you didn't catch it live and you listened to the archives, of course you heard me talk about it. Well, article came out the day before yesterday in the Huffington Post. Barron Trump. We all know who Barron Trump is, right? He goes to a private school, an elite school for the privileged. His school is getting taxpayer stimulus money. Yeah, imagine that. This is a Maryland private school attended by Donald Trump's son, Barron, and they're collecting taxpayer stimulus aid. Now, Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin is now demanding that that money be returned. Well, here's an interesting twist. Brentwood School in L.A., guess whose children go to that school? If you guessed Treasury Secretary Mnuchin, you were right. Hank Jones says he's headed to Bend. Well, Hank, appreciate you stopping by. Have a good night. Enjoy the sleep. I would tell you to have fun dreams, but then you might have the same kind of dreams I have. Anyway, have a good night, bro. Appreciate it. Appreciate you stopping by. Okay. Oh, Hank, before you go, what do you still do a broadcast on BTR? I don't remember if you do or not, but if you do, drop the link in the chat room there for people, and I'll read it off. So if people are interested, they can go check it out. But I seem to remember you did something on a BTR channel, if I remember correctly. According to all reports, neither school has any plans to return that money. And I find this a little bit disturbing. This money, for the stimulus that they're talking about here, is the more recent one that was passed for $489 billion or something like that for the small business loan program. That is the package that they're getting the money from. This is supposed to be for small businesses, not elite schools. This is crazy, man. How did they even get it to start with? Because you have to put, if you're a small business and you're trying to get a loan through this stimulus package, there are forms that you have to fill out. You have to apply to get the money. And as far as I know, it's a loan, not a given to you. It's different than the $2.2 trillion that is supposed to cover the $1,200 for every American. I'm still waiting on my damn $1,200. Why have I not gotten a stimulus check yet? I'm still trying to figure that out. I checked my bank account this morning and it's still not there. I don't know why I'm not getting my $1,200. I'm upset here. I want my $1,200, damn it. But there are forms that have to be filled out in order to get any of the money from any of these loan programs and stimulus packages if you're a small business or a school or anything like that. There are forms that you have to fill out. So when you fill out a form, when these elite schools for the wealthy fill out a form, that ought to be red flags for the people that are handling the distribution of the money. And they ought to be saying, sorry guys, but you just don't qualify. I don't get it. I do not get it. How are these schools getting all of this money And out of the hundreds of people I've talked to in the past month, I've only talked to one who's gotten a check. And that was about, well, that was last Friday when I talked to a woman that works at the bank. She still works every day. She's the only one that I know that I've talked to that's gotten a check. And I talked to a couple hundred people since the 1st of April. And I had to get to the 1st of May before I finally talked to the first person that got a, that's got a check. And they're talking about more stimulus packages. Folks, wait until everybody's got their $1,200. If you're really serious about this, let's wait until everybody's gotten their $1,200 apiece, $500 for children and whatever, and then talk about another package. This is crazy. The debt has bounced. Folks, I could not believe when I heard the other day that the national debt has increased $30 trillion since this whole nightmare began. Has surpassed Obama for increasing the national debt. Absolutely ridiculous. What should have happened was economies should have never been shut down. We should have taken a page from Switzerland's, what Switzerland did, where they refused to shut anything down. They allowed this virus to run its course in their country. And as a result, yeah, a lot of people died, but they allowed the people to make their own decisions. And they told them, if you want to close your doors, that's your choice. If you want to wear a mask, that's your choice. If you want to stay home, that's your choice. We, the government of Switzerland, believe that you, the citizens, are intelligent enough, wise enough, and responsible enough to decide for yourself what's in your best interest. Now, Switzerland is they're a capitalist / socialist / democracy. They're kind of a little bit of everything. But even under those conditions, they still, under that kind of government, they still allowed the people to make their own choices. Here in America, where we're supposed to have this wonderful thing called the Constitution, which recognizes the individual's right to decide for themselves and not be controlled by a government, but yet everybody has obeyed these totalitarian dictatorial edicts coming from mayors, governors, and other idiots in Washington, in D.C. Folks, the republic that the founders created doesn't exist. That's a cold, hard fact. The great American experiment failed. And finally, several major airlines are requiring passengers to wear masks while flying. Now, I've got a clip here I'm going to play on this, but the problem is it is online, so I'm going to have to do this really weird, crazy thing where I'm going to have to, like, play it on this other computer so that the microphone can pick it up and run with it. Let's see if we can. Oh, wouldn't you know, it's a commercial. Imagine that. Okay, well, we got a commercial, and let's go ahead and skip the ad.
Starting today, several airlines are making wearing masks mandatory for travelers from the time they check in all the way till they reach their final destination. I did speak with some people here at Pittsburgh International Airport. They tell me they're fine with wearing the mask, but what's really making them feel safe is the fact that there's barely anybody traveling. After 2 months, Dan Young is back to traveling on a plane.
I used to travel every week for business, flying mostly in the Northeast. And about the beginning of March, I had to change and start driving everywhere. So this is my first flight.
The airport and airline policies certainly different from the last time Young flew. In addition to several other measures, airlines are now making it mandatory for passengers to wear masks.
as passengers, I think it's also a really good idea. Keep people from coughing and sneezing on each other.
Keep people from coughing and sneezing on each other. You know, when I was growing up, if you coughed or sneezed or anything like that and you didn't cover your mouth, my mama would backhand you so quick, your head would spin around like The Exorcist, you know. My mom would just knock you straight down on your ass. But when I was growing up, we were taught, carry a handkerchief in your pocket. Girls, you carry a hanky in your, or what they call a kerchief for girls. You carry one in your purse. And if you have to cough or sneeze, you pull it out, you cover your mouth, and you cough and sneeze into the hanky. Now, this is just manners. This is being polite. Today, I see people cough, and it's just... and they don't cover their mouths or nothing like that. They just... It's like, you know, what barn did you grow up in? You know, were you raised by wolves or something? Because, I mean, you're just absolutely ill-mannered and just plain nasty. You know? Anyway, here's some more of the clip.
United Airlines, Delta, and JetBlue are all implementing mask policies starting today. While they vary slightly, they all generally require the same thing from passengers, wearing some type of mask or face covering from the time you check in at the boarding gate through the duration of your flight and until you deplane. Most airlines will give you a mask for free if you don't bring your own.
I think that, you know, it's best when everybody's wearing them in terms of it being effective, from what I've heard.
From what I've heard?
Help to save your life, and it will help to save other people's lives.
Okay, now this was a black guy. First was a white guy, then it was a white girl. Now this is a black guy, and he's like, you're going to save your life, save everybody else's lives. Well, here's the thing. He's got the mask is covering his chin and his bottom lip. Dude, that is not how you wear a mask. It's like, this guy's a complete idiot. These people are freaking morons.
Travelers also tell me the nearly empty airport makes them feel comfortable flying.
The airport is very empty, you know. It's a sad time.
I'm looking forward to getting on the plane, having a lot of room to myself, and hopefully it's all sterilized and sanitized.
Hopefully it's all sterilized and sanitized. Yeah, keep living in your little sterilized bubble. You people that do this, you know, you constantly got to be sterilizing everything. What you don't realize is you are reducing your body's ability to create natural antibiotics and all that stuff. See, me, I don't do vaccines, and I don't live in a sterile environment, and the only thing I ever use bleach on is my dishes, and that's because I have an outside kitchen, and so I have a big pot for washing dishes, because I can take that pot, put it on my grill, my rocket stove, heat my water up for dishes after I get done cooking dinner, and then I can set that pot over to the side and wash my dishes in hot water. And then I have a bucket for a cold rinse, and then another bucket for a cold bleach rinse. And then the dishes get put up in a strainer. That's about the only sterilization that ever happens around here. But those are dishes. They're that, you know, because I'm out, you know, I have an outside kitchen. Well, you have to take a few little precautions there, and a bleach rinse is good for your dishes. It really is. But, you know, so we've got, you know, but my problem is I don't know. I don't know that this is really a good idea for because all these people are doing is putting off the inevitable, because at some point, everybody is going to become infected. I don't care who you are. At some point, you are going to be exposed to this virus. There is no avoiding it. All you're doing is postponing the inevitable. That's all you're doing. Meanwhile, you got people like me refusing to wear masks because I am pretty damn confident that my lifestyle, since I was like 21 years old, my lifestyle has been such that I've not had vaccines. I've not been sick in almost 30 years. And the way I've lived my life has forced my immune system to actually do its freaking job. So I am thoroughly convinced that I'm most likely asymptomatic. But I'm out here purposely trying to get sick. I am trying to become exposed. I am going everywhere I can think of that I can go when I do go to town. And I'm back to trying not to go to town anymore than I have to, try to get back to my normal life, which means not really going to town that much. But I've gone to town more in the past 2 months than I have in any given year. I just normally I don't go to town. So I'm kind of getting back into that habit of just going back to living my normal life like I used to. But when I do go to town, I keep praying that I'm going to come in contact with somebody who's going to expose me to this virus. Because even if I'm not asymptomatic, I am pretty damn confident that the worst I'm going to experience would be what most people would experience if they just got the typical, you know, seasonal flu. Because I honestly believe that my immune system is that strong. But I'm pretty damn sure I'm asymptomatic. I have this. Bringing It Boy in the chat room says, I'm the same here, no mask. Proud non-believer. Let that drawl out tonight, that country drawl. Oh, did you pick up on that, huh? every once in a while, that country drawl will slip out. I just can't help it sometimes. But... I have the same attitude toward masks that I have about vaccines. If they work that damn well, then it doesn't matter if I wear one or not. I'm carrying a handkerchief with me. And if I've got to cough or I've got to sneeze or if I don't have my handkerchief with me, I will grab my shirt and I'll pull my shirt up and I'll cough and sneeze into my shirt. Because I don't tuck my shirts in, so it's real easy for me to grab the bottom of my shirt, pull it up, cough, season it. Because it's the polite thing to do. But if masks and vaccines work as well as you think they do, then it doesn't matter whether I get a vaccine or wear a mask. Or don't. Because if they work that well, you got nothing to worry about. That's how I look at it. Okay, with that... Let's pull this up here. Okay. Spreaker.com. The channel is Ideas Are Bulletproof Radio. Sundays beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. American Renegade with Art Underground. That's every Sunday. On Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Suzette Live Talk, Wednesday Night Instrumentals with Art, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. RZ's Thursday Tune Show, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Time to Wind Down with Smokey every Friday nights. I do not know the time that he's doing it. I'm going to have to find that out. But that's every Friday night. I'm going to have to find out what his hours are so I can get that in there. And then every Saturday, RZ's Saturday Free Speech Zone, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So there is the lineup. Monday is the only day of the week that nothing's going on. So if you think you got what it takes, to host your own broadcast. Get in contact with RZ. Pitch yourself to him. If he likes what you got, maybe he'll bring you on for Mondays. We've got Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday covered. So, hey, you never know. Anyway, I want to thank everyone for joining me this evening. Hope it's been insightful, informative, and maybe even a little entertaining. I know Suzette and I had a blast on Spreaker last night. It was obvious she was having fun. I let my silliness kind of slip out last night. And I do that every once in a while because sometimes you just have to be silly. You have to get goofy. People tell me all the time, Art, you're too damn serious. Well, yeah, I am, but we live in serious times and calls for a serious attitude. But every once in a while, you have to just kind of cut loose, get a little goofy, act a little silly. And when I'm live with Suzette, whether I'm on her broadcast or she's on mine, she just has a way of bringing that goofiness out in me. She always seems to be able to set an atmosphere that invites that goofy side of me to come out. And I like that because it allows me to be able to release that energy in it. And you have to let it out sometimes. So anyway, thanks for tuning in. Please take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, no matter how hard they try to intimidate you, don't ever be afraid to stand up, speak out, and let your voice be heard. Folks, this is going to be a tough year. I know that. But we got to be strong, and we cannot, under any circumstances, allow the Democrats to take the House or the White to take the Senate or to take the White House. What we need is a full, independent legislature and preferably an independent White House. Maybe then we can get something done. Anyway, for American Renegade, I'm Art on the Ground. Be safe out there. Thank you.